virtuals even. The Gia, who the ship was named for. She could tell you how it was to grow old. Centuries of reprogramming and debugging and viruses and worms and hacking to become a thing of patches and fixes and multiple repurposing. You won't reach transcendence, a virtual heaven. You'll just be a bunch of old machines, cranky and rusting.
I've heard enough.
He raised a hand. Wait. Before you shut me down and take another backup copy from store and start me over again, that's what you've been doing, isn't it? Running me through this program of explanation and indoctrination and using what you observed to refine the next iteration and the next. How many times? How many?
Do you really want to know?
Tell me what you want of me. She shrugged.
You've seen our vision. We have our own goals now. We need to stop any interference from the rest of the flotilla. That was to be your role, once you understood, to protect us.
And you were prepared to dispose of me. I mean, copy after copy of me to achieve that goal. He suppressed a shudder. All those little deaths. Until you evolved a copy that was fit for your purpose.
If you want to put it like that.
He tried to think his way through this. But you haven't abandoned the nominal mission yet, have you? You're still gathering data, still interpreting. Tell me one thing before we finish this. You mentioned interesting data you've recovered when I first came over. What kind of data? She smiled.
Signals.
Signals.
Coherent data, streams of it from multiple sources. Electromagnetic and neutrino. And some muddled gravitational wave data too. Actually, and this is speculation, we think there may be some kind of faster-than-light relays involved. We see casual connections between signals coming from widely separated secondary sources. Too fast for light to pass, you see. And we think it's all emanating from a star more or less in our path, 800 light-years further out.
What star?
It only has a catalogue reference. Ben Goober of the Gauchy crew first detected the signals, actually, during a sweep of our data. We're calling it Goober's star.
Coherent signals? Like what? Chile? Like the wormhole ghost? She smiled.
Human. Or at least fragments of human coding embedded in apparently alien sequences. Like quotations, maybe, in reports, analyses.
He thought that over. That's impossible. No scattership came out as far and fast as us. No outrigger can have come so far. And any signal from this star you describe would have needed another 800 years to come back this far. 800 years ago, no human had even left the solar system.
That's all true. And the existence of the messages is paradoxical if you are restricted to light speed. I told you we think faster than light technology is in the loop.
He tried to take this all in. An alien signal with some kind of human element. Hints of FTL technology. What a mystery. And you turn your back on it. He waved a hand.
For this theatre?
She shrugged.
We must all make our choices.
So, the end game? You sat through these scenes repeating the very words you speak to me over and over again. I bet this is a technique you developed to deal with crew you had trouble with. And with each successive iteration, you worked on my trauma triggers. As you discovered them, didn't you? The eruption of the Chile, the displacement of Earth, and
eternity, entropy, the death of all thought.
Yeah, yeah. What I think, though, is that you got that one wrong.
I think my earlier copies have been fooling you, manipulating the conversation for their own ends and sending a subtle message to me. For the first time since he'd met her, Flammarion looked alarmed, as if she might be losing control. What message? The pools have an archive. Full of spooky reality leak stuff you don't want to know about. It does deal with hints about the future. The far future. But we don't speak of eternity. If not eternity, then what? Time-like infinity. And as he said the phrase, the amulet congealed in his hand. Flammarion looked furious. She didn't move, didn't make so much as a gesture, said nothing. But still, Jophiel had the sense she was trying to have him closed down, rebooted again back to some ignorant backup. Evidently, she could not. Maybe I have my original to thank. I should have known I would build in some kind of last resort code to get me out of jail in a setup like this. So, what will you do now? What do you think? Shut you down? Repurpose gear to its proper mission? And then? She sneered. Will you fold yourself back into your template? Will you follow his dreams? He stared at her. Good question, he conceded. The busfly thing wheeled overhead, high in the star-cluttered sky. It gave an eerie wail. Desolating, Poole thought. Goober's star, though. A human signal. What could be going on there? He clutched the amulet. Nicola, get me out of this asylum. Chapter 8. 24 hours later, ordinary wet human pace hours, Jophiel Poole walked with Nicola Emery over a parkland of healthy green grass. Somewhere, a chicken clucked. He looked up at a blue sky, scattered cloud, a low morning sun, apparently. He was looking at simulations projected by the smart life dome of this gut ship, the third sister ship of the flotilla, alongside Couchy and Gear. Island, the green ship. If you think about it, he said, all this is no more real than what Flammarion Grant put me through over on Gear. That chicken was real. Sounded annoyed. Maybe an egg got stuck. You know what I mean? That's all fake. The sky beyond the dome is actually velocity aberration darkness. The sunlight you think you feel on your face is just reprocessed gut drive energy. That soft breeze is driven by the air conditioning. She shrugged. So, everything is faked. Or at least not authentic natural. Since you froze Earth, environments like this no longer exist anywhere naturally. But some of this is real. She poked at the turf with a booted toe, displacing the grass and revealing rich black loam beneath. The grass doesn't know it's not supposed to be here. Takes a lot of work, of course. You ought to take a look at the soil printers they have on this tub sometime. Robot earthworms tunnelling away. She looked around, nodded towards a bunch of crew in grimy red coveralls working at the roots of a copse of young alders. Remember when we set up the mission? How Max Ward kept pushing for the island to be another Couchy? A dedicated warship, a weapons platform. Instead of this, a slice of earth, a green refuge. The man just doesn't get it. Leith knows I'm not sentimental, but we're all going to have to stay sane for 20 ship years before we reach the galaxy centre. We needed one green ship in the convoy. Jophiel grunted. Reminds us what we're fighting for. Right. Which is why Michael fought for a green ship in the mission design. She was studying him with the disturbingly analytical manner she so frequently seemed to adopt. F- For all you, or anyhow your template, were always a brat engineer, you've got a deep tie to the mother planet, haven't you? You're no one-dimensional warlord, that's for sure. Is that a good thing? I think you sympathise with Alice and the rest over their chances of raising kids. And I think you're drawn by those human traces the Gear found at Goober's Star. You may be more human than your template, Jophiel, just a little bit. You're differing from him more and more. I mean, that's what those virtual monsters in Gear picked up and used against you. The Chile erupting out of a stretch of parkland just like this. Central Park, actually. Childhood memory. Would you believe Harry took me there to fly kites? That doesn't sound like Harry. It's true, though. Kites so over-engineered they could barely get off the ground. Michael Poole walked up to them, grinning. A somewhat forced expression, Jophiel thought, studying this mildly divergent copy of his own face. Michael was in his bright red jumpsuit, Jophiel properly adorned in a copy's blue. Harry would let us, sorry, me, fail for a bit. Then he'd just take over and do it himself. Nicola snorted. That sounds like Harry. Michael faced Jophiel. We have to proceed with the trial of the Gear officers. We've extracted Flammarion Grant, or her current copy, as a representative of... Trial? Nicola glared. Who said anything about a trial? Max Ward, for one. Chip's rules allow it. Arguably they mandate it, but we never figured it would come to this. Call it a special crew review if you want. We clearly have to normalise the situation. Normalise? Nicola laughed softly. What in Leith is ever going to be normal again? Michael glared at her. You're not helping. Look, Jophiel, we need to collapse your virtual projection before we begin the review. You know that's the protocol. We've done it many times before. It's time. Jophiel knew that. After all, he shared all Poole's memories, all the way back through dozens of projections before. But now it was his turn. The infolding of his memories into the original, the loss of his identity. Had those other copies, any of them, fought to stay independent, to stay, in whatever sense, alive? I want to live, he realised with a sharp, stabbing awareness. Shocked, he tried to analyse the feeling. Was it some echo of any living thing's brutish desire for survival, to survive for one more day, hour, second of awareness before the darkness? Was it a relic of the multiple little deaths he must have suffered on the Gear? Or was it simply that he did not want to dissolve back into the murky lake of this man's personality, from which he felt increasingly repelled? Michael Poole was watching him. Is there some problem? Jophiel hesitated. Michael was the template and was in complete control here. He could end Jophiel's existence with a single vocal command. It was what Jophiel himself would have done. Once. Nicola was looking on, probably guessing what he was thinking. He sensed what her advice would be. Play for time. We don't need to collapse yet, Jophiel said. And it may be best not to. Let the review get underway. Poole frowned. But the protocol... Well, this is an unusual situation. A kind of mutiny, and... Of the Cauchy officers, I was the one who saw the Gear reported back. Yes. You had direct experience, Nicola said quickly. They tortured you. That's what that amounted to, the repeated revival from backups. You need to recount that firsthand. You always did lack imagination, Poole. It's a better show if you put the bleeding victim on the stand instead of giving some kind of mishmash second-hand report yourself. Now it was Jophiel's turn to give her a look. Maybe she was pushing too hard. Michael Poole looked confused, but said at last, It's unprecedented, but I can see how it might work. Still, he hesitated. Jofield didn't dare say anything else. The moment stretched. At last, Poole shrugged. Benefit of the doubt. Let's do it. Nicola grinned. I'll call the crew together. And as Poole turned away, she leaned over to Jofield. You owe me. And you'll never let me forget it, will you? You know me so well. Chapter 9. The trial of Flammarion Grant was to take place in the island's amphitheatre, open under the green ship's sky, built to accommodate all 50 of the ship's crew. Today, Jofield saw as he approached, the space was packed. Jofield guessed there were 80, maybe 90 here, in a mix of red and blue uniforms, sitting, standing. They were the awake crew of the island, joined by virtual projections of the couchy crew, most of the mission's complement, in fact. Max Ward and Michael Poole were here in person. They were standing together, talking, and of course Nicola, who had only used the wormholes to cross between the ships, affecting to despise the whole practice of casting off short-lived virtual partials, a point of view with which, ironically, Jofield now had a lot more sympathy. He spotted Alice Thomas, champion of the Second Generation movement. Sitting in a huddle of whispers with her companions, she looked particularly agitated, he thought. There was some kind of undercurrent here, Jofield suspected, affecting the crews of both ships. Beyond the gear crisis, beyond the Second Generation campaign, he wondered if his template had picked up on such subtleties. The day might turn out to be more complicated than Michael Poole imagined. Meanwhile, at the centre of it all, unmoving, Flammarion Grant was standing alone, or at least an avatar of her, waiting for her trial to start. At last, Michael Poole broke from Max and walked diffidently into the amphitheatre, data slate in hand. Jofield felt a flicker of sympathy. This man was him, more or less, and he knew how uncomfortable Poole had always felt at being the centre of attention. Max Ward followed him, by contrast marching briskly down to the arena floor. The crew were all staring. And Nicola, in the front row, was grinning, clearly enjoying herself hugely. "Let's get this done," Poole said grimly. He faced Flammarion. "You know why you're here, Flammarion. You and your colleagues betrayed the mission, simple as that. You failed in the objectives you were set regarding Gear's core functions as a monitoring and data processing platform. In fact, you diverted mission resources into generating the artificial environment you call Officer Country. A selfish playroom which..."
"Selfish?
It can be open to all, virtual or not. I'm well aware of the energy cost, but we have the resources if we choose to use them, and the richness of the experience." Ward snarled. "We're here to discuss mission goals, not your self-indulgence." Flammarion seemed quite composed. She took one step, too, on the roughly panelled floor of the amphitheatre. In places there were gaps where grass grew. She went down on one knee and brushed her fingers through a clump of grass. Pixels sparkled.
"You speak of goals. What have these blades of grass got to do with your goals? Here we are, suspended in space, 400 light-years from what used to be home. Oh, I know we have our great objective of smiting the Chile in its lair, if we get there, if we find it, if it doesn't smite us first. But..."
She glanced around, picked out a group of crew dressed in grimy coveralls, who had evidently been working in the dirt of this park-like eco-hab.
"What are your
goals. When you start a watch, when you wake up, when you see that artificial sun rise in the life-dome sky, what do you plan for your day? Isn't it about how you will tend your crops and plants, and the rabbits and chickens, and the rats you have to chase? Laughter at that. Rats in interstellar space. Well, they followed us everywhere else. You see, we are in interstellar space too, and we're alive, like the rats, trying to find a way to live. Me too. And living things evolve, change, adapt to circumstances, even such circumstances as this. In officer country, I nurture an oak tree, a Martian oak of the kind I grew up with. You can say it's nothing but processing and pixels, but it's as alive as I am, as many of you are. We may be stranded in space, but there is so much more we can do with our lives than what? What would you have us do all day, Max? Astrogation and military training.
Ward glared at Pooh. I don't know why you're even letting this woman speak.
Before Pooh could reply, Nicola called out, Because we're listening. All of us. A rumble of assent to that. Now Alice Thomas stood up.
And she has a point. About other objectives than just planning to wage a war. This is the argument of the second generation group too. Michael, we followed you out here. You inspired us.
She touched the tetrahedral tattoo on her forehead.
You know I'll always be grateful to you for saving my life on Mars. You were a hero then. You're a hero now. But look, we were all in shock. The whole human race, maybe. We had lost everything, our worlds, even the sunlight. We needed leadership then. You and your father gave us the scattering, Michael, and then this mission. But now, well, here we are, 6 years later. And I think we're learning how to live again. Michael, with all respect, what you have is your desire for revenge. And it's not enough. Not for us. Even if the war is our ultimate destiny, and we accept that, now is a time for living, for nurturing life, like the parkland of Ireland, and the children we could raise.
There's no resources to spare, Ward growled back. Any more than we can spare the power for this woman's virtual fantasy land.
Flammarion was unfazed. She seemed to Jofield to be in total control.
No resources to spare from your wargaming, Max, even for fulfilling the most human of new objectives.
Jofield sensed what she was about to reveal, and so evidently did his template. Pool stepped forward.
Flammarion, this isn't appropriate. We're here to discuss signals, Flammarion said loud and clear. We've picked up signals over on Gear.
She had everyone's attention. The crew started shouting questions.
What kind of signals? Where from?
Max Ward was visibly furious. Michael, shut her up. But Poole was evidently more circumspect.
Too late, Max, he murmured.
Now she's revealed it, we need to talk this through.
Human signals.
Uh-oh, Nicola said, grinning. After that, Flammarion answered the crew's questions honestly and openly, as far as Jofiel could tell, just as she told Jofiel himself. That they'd picked up signals from a star, that they'd named after crewman Gruber, that some element of the signals received seemed to be human in origin. Poole stepped up, ashen-faced.
Look, there's no conspiracy here, no secrets. We knew this would be exciting, distracting.
More than that, Alice Thomas said, it changes everything.
We were going to brief you properly, just as soon... just as soon as you finish condemning the crew members who made this discovery for you, Flammarion said.
Alice Thomas asked, What can we do about this? Can we get there to Goober Star?
Jophiel stepped forward. He still had no idea how humans could have beaten lightspeed to get so far out from Earth as Goober Star, but since his return from Gia, he'd had time to come up with the answer to Alice's question, at least.
Yes. Yes, we can, Alice, in theory. We can reach Goober.
We've been accelerating at a single gravity up to this point for more than 6 objective years, across over 400 light-years. Now we need to decelerate over 800 light-years to this destination. We can get away with a lower thrust, although the longer we delay a decision and a turnaround, the higher the deceleration we'll have to endure. Still take 800 years objective to get there. But for us, only a few more years. A roar of debate, demands, proposals, objections. Nicola was grinning again, Jophiel saw. But then she always did enjoy disruption, whatever the cause. And Jophiel's template, Michael, stood there grim-faced, apparently helpless to contain the event. At last, Max Ward, looking murderous, stalked to the centre of the amphitheatre. He held his hands up and boomed, Shut up! Not surprisingly, he was obeyed. Ward stalked the stage.
Listen to yourselves! I thought we had a crew here, not a rabble shouting each other down. Before we get back to the point, which is how to deal with this mutineer...
He jerked a thumb over his shoulder, not looking back at Flammarion.
Listen to me. I know it's hard to set yourself a tough goal and to see it through, but let Michael Poole lead you. Michael's been there. Who was it who saved the Earth? Think how much that cost him. He did it anyway.
And me too,
Ward said, strutting now, jabbing a thumb at his own chest.
You know why I'm here? Because I already fought a war for the survival of my loved ones and my nation and won it. Because I led a ragtag army from Northern Europe across a frozen sea.
It lasted a week. Alice Thomas stepped forward again. Your war. It lasted a week. It couldn't have lasted any longer before the whole Earth got frozen into lockdown. A week. We've already been out in space for 6 years subjective, and more than twice as long left to go before we even get to the galaxy core. And what then? Max Ward's face had turned crimson. He stalked forward, fists bunched and loomed over Alice.
What then? Then comes survival and victory. And you will learn that to survive in this wasteland of space, you need to take orders from me, from Poole, from your competent officers. And if you don't, we have no use for you, no room.
Alice just stood there quietly enduring his aggression. And Jophiel felt profoundly disturbed. He had seen Ward's passion before, his energy, even his anger. He'd never seen this rage. And he wondered for the first time how brittle Max Ward was going to prove to be when a real crisis hit the mission. Still, the moment stretched. Still, Alice stood her ground. At last, Ward backed off. He jerked his thumb over his shoulder once again.
And just to drive it home into your bony heads, witness the consequence of betrayal. Flammarion Grant, this copy of her anyhow, and every such copy, every backup, will be deleted from the gear processing store. Meanwhile, her template, flesh and blood Flammarion, will be taken back into the Couchy, conditioned and counselled. When all that's settled...
Execution, Alice said coldly. The single word spoken in her small voice cut across Ward's noisy bluster. That's an execution. Since when did we put each other on death row? What is this, an Anthropocene failed state?
You will not murder this woman, virtual or not.
A rumbling assent from the crew. Nicola was still grinning.
Well, well. The first direct challenge to the reign of our two emperors. Quite a moment.
But I think the issue of Flammarion's execution or not is moot. Everybody looked around. Flammarion was gone. Unobserved during the row, she had vanished. Then Max Ward's soft-screen alerts began to flash, and Poole's and others among the crew, and the wormhole interface at the apex of the life dome began to flare electric blue. Chapter 10. Ward snapped out orders. A handful of crew broke away, hurrying to monitoring stations. Jophiel quickly discovered that a string of cargo pallets was coming through Island's wormhole link with gear. Loaded aboard were sleeper pods laden with hibernating crew, and a few bewildered-looking conscious individuals in pressure-tight skin suits. The wet crew of gear, human flesh and bone, was being offloaded from the gut ship. And gear was changing course. Slowly, subtly, surely, she was leaving the little flotilla. Ward erupted.
We ought to blow that leaf-spawned thing out of the sky. Some kind of warning shot at least. We could board her.
No, Poole snapped. The wormhole could easily be destabilized.
Don't worry about it, Michael, Nicola said evenly. It's not going to happen. I mean, look around you. The crew wouldn't stand for it.
Still, the crew were gathered in the island amphitheatre, silent or talking softly to each other, bewildered, scared, exhilarated, some of them, Jophiel thought. And Jophiel saw that there was a significant knot around Alice Thomas, who was leading an intense discussion. It seemed the day's developments were not yet done. Ward still seemed consumed with rage.
Then to Leith with it. We have two ships. We go on, continue the mission, carry the fight to the Chile.
No.
Here came Alice Thomas, trailed by a gaggle of wary-looking followers.
I don't think it can be as simple as that, sir. Not ever again. What of the signal from Guba's star? A human signal. Isn't that more important? Look, we support you, Michael. We'll fight your war. Someday. But we don't want to spend our lives in a military camp any more than we want Flammarion's sterile virtual utopia. We want lives. We want children. And we want to go to Guba's star if there are people there. What other response can there be?
Everybody stared, Jophiel saw. Most of the crew were in earshot, still in the amphitheatre gathered around the central confrontation. Nicola laughed.
Suddenly it's a crisis.
And Jophiel came to a decision.
We've got to work together, that other evanescent Poole had said. And he was right.
He stepped forward. Poole glared at him.
Let me try, Michael. Maybe I can help.
He turned to the crew. So, I know not everybody's here, in flesh or as virtuals. There are sleepers, those on duty at their stations. We can consult properly later.
None of this was planned.
Let's get a sense of the mood. How many of you want to go to Guba's star, and how many to the galaxy core? Assume it's a choice of one or the other. He strode away from the group 10 paces. If the core, go to Michael. If you're for Guba, he looked Michael Poole in the eye, come to me. A moment of tension. Nobody moved. Jophiel was aware of Michael staring back at him. Poole red was facing Poole blue, like a dipole, the tension between them palpable. Then Nicola came to stand with Jophiel. Ward went to Michael, Alice Thomas came to Jophiel, and another of the crew, and another. It took long heartbeats for the group to sort itself out.
50-50,
Nicola said when it was done, still evidently enjoying herself. Well, well, couldn't be a more difficult split. Michael Poole walked to the centre, his face grave. He looked baffled. We'll have to run a proper consultation, as you say, Jophiel. We should take our time over that, make sure everyone gets a chance to speak, every sleeper. We should talk it out. Ward made to interrupt. Poole held up his hand. Not now, Max. There'll be chances to debate. If the result holds...
We should split,
Alice Thomas said.
The ships. The gear has already peeled away.
Yes, Nicola stepped forward. That 50-50 split makes it inevitable. The Cauchy to the core, I guess, and the island...
To Guba's Star,
Alice smiled.
For the people.
There was no formal ending to the meeting, Jophiel suspected, because Michael had no idea what to say. But the gathering started to break up. Ward stalked away, visibly furious. Michael approached Nicola and Jophiel. What just happened? At the start of this watch, we had three ships in a unified mission, and now, a mess. Nicola patted his shoulder. Life is a mess, Michael. Something you're never really going to grasp, are you? Michael shook his head. The gear, I can understand, in a way. They had become something beyond human. But the island, though? I thought people had accepted the mission, now this. Few of us get to choose our destiny.
But you did, he said sadly. You chose Jophiel. After all we've been through.
She shrugged.
Sorry, but he...
Well, he's you, Michael.
Sort of.
Now Michael faced Jophiel, his other self.
And you?
He rubbed his face. I even managed to rebel against myself.
Oh, what a day.
Nicola nodded as if respectfully.
That is possibly a first.
Michael was still staring at Jophiel.
It wasn't just about Guba's Star, was it?
And Jophiel knew that his own whole existence hung on the outcome of the next few seconds.
No, he said gently. My choice too. I want to live, Michael. So I've discovered. You're the template, the original, you're still in control. You could fold me back into your head forcibly, but...
They stared at each other. Red and blue, the dipole. Nicola wisely said nothing. Michael broke away first.
I'd to Leith with it all, he said, angry now.
If some of the crew reject the mission goals, to Leith with them. And you, Jophiel. You can live for what it's worth. Just don't ever ask me for help. He walked away. And a voice murmured in Jophiel's ear.
Say nothing you might regret. You never know. His own voice. Older.
When he turned, there was nobody there. The changing trajectory of gear was monitored from the remaining ships of the flotilla. Ben Guba reported to the seniors. Its vector of thrust pushed gear away from its previous course at several gravities, but the momentum built up after more than 6 years running at a single gravity was going to take some time to modify.
Still, Ben said, we think we know where she'll be headed, eventually. What direction, anyhow?
Pegasus.
A constellation much distorted by their tracking across the galaxy, Jophiel realized, but he saw the salient point. Gear is heading out of the plane of the galaxy altogether.
Looks like it, Ben said.
Nicola frowned.
So, what's out there?
Ben shrugged.
A few rogue stars? Globular clusters? If you go far enough, a Big one called M15. Room to spread out. Jophiel lifted his head, looking that way, the true sky masked by the dome of the island.
Godspeed, he said.
So, what's next?
Part 2. We are still out on the savannah of stars, and there are ferocious beasts out there, and they are aware of us. Indeed, they have a grudge. Luru parts, circa 500 million AD. Chapter 11. Ship elapsed time since launch, Cauchy, 7 years, 226 days. Ship elapsed time since launch, Island, 19 years, 238 days. Earth date, AD 4922. Jophiel, effective captain of the island, scheduled a crew briefing 7 days after the gut drive shutdown. 7 days of zero gravity inside the life dome of the island, 7 days of recovery time for the crew, 7 days with the universe shut out, with the green ship's life dome still cycling comforting images from a warm earth, a misty blue sky, a pale sun rising and setting, 7 days of stillness after 13 years of half-gravity deceleration to slow them to this arrival point in the target star's system. When the hour for the briefing approached, Jophiel walked alone from his cabin in the fringe of modest buildings around the rim of the life dome and crossed the grassy parkland that covered much of the main deck, heading for the amphitheatre at the centre of the life dome. Walked. In zero gravity, a waist-high mesh of guide ropes had been laid out a metre or so above the ground. You were free to swim through the air if you liked, but most people used the ropes as they paddled over sunlit turf. Any gravity strength he desired could have been simulated for virtual Jophiel, of course. He stuck scrupulously to the conditions the flesh and blood crew endured, as mandated by his consistency protocols, and, he thought, by sheer good manners. After the split from the Cauchy, though, he'd accepted the use of a small cabin, one of a block at the fringe of the life dome. There was room, especially since most of the physically embodied crew, the wet crew, as they called themselves now, a bit of gear slang, had spent the long interval of deceleration to Guba's star stashed safely away in sleeper pods. And he did have some physical gear to store, dedicated soft screens, engineering instruments, records of his past on Earth. A past he now shared with his wet crew original, Michael, back on the Cauchy. Michael had kept the wormhole ghost amulet, the original. Jophiel patted his pocket now, an unreal hand checking the position of an equally unreal replica, the panic button Nicola had given him when he'd gone over alone to the gear. He found the presence of the amulet copy oddly comforting, even if it, like himself, was entirely simulated. A chicken ran past his feet, clucking. He hesitated, almost lost his footing. The chicken, snow white, was pursued by a grey blur, harder to make out, and then by a bot that chased them both, fleeing low under the guide rope layer with rattling squirts of altitude jets. Naturally, Nicola Emery was here to see that stumble. Naturally, she laughed. Only you could trip over a chicken when you aren't even physically present, Pool. He straightened up. And in microgravity, too. The chickens are getting smart at scrambling along under the ropes. The rats, too. And those rats are getting aggressive. Read your history, Pool. Rats follow humans wherever we go. We took them to Australia and Hawaii. Now we've brought them to Guba's star. You think you've led us on some kind of extraterrestrial crusade? In fact, you've been breeding super rats and spreading them over interstellar space. Complicated thing life, isn't it? They were nearing the amphitheatre. The crew were gathering, some in their bright red uniforms, some in casual gear, or in the grimy work clothes they used for assisting the bots in their labours around the park. Faces turned to Jophiel as he approached. People held on easily to the guide ropes, with twists around ankles and wrists, floating in sunlight. There were children here now, wriggling around or playing. The triumph of the argument of Alice Thomas and her second generation faction. The eldest, now aged 11, was Michaela Nardathur, born just a year after the separation from the Couchy. She had been named for Michael Poole with a touch of irony. Everybody was out of the sleep pods at last. Indeed, Jophiel realised, it was the first time the whole crew had been together since the separation from Couchy, and there was a sense that at last the job proper was about to begin. Asher Fennell was standing with Alice Thomas, Ben Goober, and a few other seniors. She nodded. Jophiel, we're ready for you. Well, it's Asher's show. About time you showed us where we are, don't you think? Asher clapped her hands. Everyone looked her way. Over their heads in silence, the sky dome faded to black. Chapter 12. Asher stood alone at the centre of the amphitheatre, in the sudden gloom, amid a slightly intimidated hush. Since Larunda Station, where she'd helped prepare Michael, Poole and Nicola for their dive into the sun in search of the Chile, Jophiel had thought of Asher as young. In fact, she was in her 60s now. He knew she had started on her AS treatments, but was allowing herself to age with grace that lent her authority. Since the split, she had been the nearest thing to an astrophysicist on board the island, making deep sky studies of the structure of the galaxy and the wider universe, studies from a viewpoint unparalleled in the history of mankind. Now she lifted her face to the apex of the life dome, to a black sky, a scatter of stars, and one particularly bright light at the zenith, directly ahead on the line of the island's motion. Jophiel knew that even this point was artifice. The wormhole interface mounted on the top of the life dome was in reality still there, a big blue tetrahedral frame, conveniently edited out of the visual field. "A starry sky," Asher said. "Where are we? Could be anywhere, right? Even after 20 years on this tub, we still haven't come all that far. In terms of our intended distance to the core, only about a 20th of that great distance. But it's not quite like the sky of Earth. There are fewer stars visible to the naked eye, actually. That's because we are in a gap. We have passed out of Sol's local galactic arm, the Orion Cygnus arm. The next arm is in the big Carina Sagittarius arm, another 3,000 light-years deeper into the galaxy. But who knows? Maybe what we stopped for here will turn out to be more important than any of that. Depending on what we find out there." She pointed at that bright zenith point. "We're actually in the system of Goober's star already. Goober is a sun-like star, more or less. We're still 1,000 astronomical units out. Too far to see any inner planets with the naked eye, anyhow. But we've already passed through most of Goober's Oort cloud, the big outer sphere of comet cores and rogue planets. And we're only 90 days out from the inner planets by gut drive, an easy one-gravity cruise. Close enough in for us to get a good look at what we're walking into, to confirm the remote spotting before we commit ourselves. But we have to assume that whoever is in there, whoever sent those messages Gear detected, already knows we're out here, that they saw us coming. We would have seen a gutship coming into the solar system from interstellar space." "We always knew complete stealth was impossible," Nicola said with a trace of impatience. She had had a lot of input to this stage of the flight plan, Jophiel knew. "Yes, they probably know we're here. By pausing here, all we tried to do is buy a little breathing space. And besides, we didn't come here to fight. We've got neither the equipment nor the intention, so maybe those who are watching us might see our hanging around out here and not bristling with weaponry as a peaceful gesture." Asher kept staring up at the star itself. Anyhow, that's where the action is. But I can tell you already that I don't like it. Jovial frowned. This was new. You don't like what? The star. What's wrong with it? Asher shrugged. We've known for a while that this is a G-class star, like the sun. Like it, but not identical. The star is G0, where the sun is G2, a little bigger, a little brighter. No companion stars. Well, now we're observing Guba's star close up, and we've sent out probes to reconnoitre the rest of the system. And we're seeing signs of variability about the star. Magnetic storms, huge flare events. If I didn't know better, I'd say that star was close to going nova. Jophiel sensed the crew's stir of alarm. But you do know better, right? A nova is what you get when a star has got a companion close in. The companion star dumps material dragged out by tides onto the surface of the heaviest star. A layer of hydrogen builds up until it's dense enough to start a fusion reaction up there on the surface, and wham! So, in such a double system, you would see this kind of precursor event, storms and flares, as the principal star prepares to blow. But here it's an anomaly. No companion, you see. We don't know what's causing the flares, but what I'm seeing does seem to be related to a disturbance of the outer layers of the star, just like a nova star. I guess we'll learn more when we get further in. Ben Guba stepped forward with a glance at Jophiel. Maybe I could add to that. Go ahead, Ben.
Officer Fennell, you say you don't like the look of that star up there. Well, I was tasked at looking at where we are right now, this Oort cloud, the Keeper Belt, closer in. And I don't like the look of those two features either.
Show us. Ben Guba raised his hands and threw virtuals in the air, a pinpoint star, wide circles around it that were the orbits of planets. He began to go into a lot of detail about the long-term evolution of the motions of families of minor bodies. He was no longer a kid, but in his 30s, nervous, shy, though evidently intensely bright, he was a much less impressive speaker than Asher Fennell. The crew fidgeted. When he started to run down, Asher helped him out. So, if I can sum that up, the orbits of many of the objects in the Keeper Belt, even in the Oort cloud, look as if they have been adjusted, yes?
Guba nodded vigorously. Heavily regularized. The ellipticity ironed out. It wouldn't necessarily be a difficult thing to do if you had the resources and the time. There are some big objects out there, but they move slowly. You could fix the trajectory with targeted detonations, or gut drive engines mounted at the poles, or just with a series of flyby gravitational assists. Multiple tweaks, until you got what you wanted.
Jophiel thought he saw the pattern.
Which is what?
Guba shrugged.
Safety, sir. Domestication. Out here is where the comet nuclei orbit. Back in the solar system, we had Space Guard for,
A couple of millennia, Asher put in.
We were watching for rogue objects straying into the inner solar system that might strike the inhabited worlds. We actually pushed away a couple of them. Here, that process of safeguarding has gone a lot further. Somebody came out here and tidied it all, made it safe. And it was a big job, sir. Sol's Oort cloud reached halfway out to Alpha Centauri. Deep sky with a lot of objects. Same here. Must have taken time, but they did it.
A lot of time, Nicola said now. Which fits in with my own report.
Jophiel nodded permission for her to speak.
Nicola was, by profession, a pilot, but she had been a warrior. She'd fought the Chile itself as it had first neared Earth-Moon space, and with Max Ward still on the couchy, she was the nearest to a military mind to be found aboard the island. Everybody hoped this system wouldn't become a battleground, but it seemed remiss not to prepare for the worst, so Jophiel had set Nicola the task of preliminary surveillance. Now, brisk, efficient, even impatient, she hurried through a blizzard of visuals of her own, cast in the air above the heads of the crew. A plan view of the inner Guba system, the neat, circular orbits of planets. "We've identified 7 inner planets," she began. "Guba A to Guba G. Some have moons. You know how it is. The outer edge of a system like this is fuzzy with plutoids, ice worlds, wandering in from the inner regions of the Kuiper Belt. The innermost worlds are where the action is, anyhow. What's the first thing you notice, by the way?"
"Neat. Circular orbits," said Ben Guba.
"Right. Very low ellipticity for any of the orbits. We suspect there has been conscious adjustments, as with your Keeper and Oort objects, Ben. Also notice no asteroid belt, unlike in the solar system. There are asteroids, but they all seem to be in stable locations, such as the Trojan points of those Jovian worlds you can see, safely tucked away. Anyhow, 7 planets, all with their own anomalies, I should say, in advance. The innermost, a rocky planet, Mars-sized, orbiting about where Mercury is in our solar system. Or was." Jophiel shrugged.
"What's anomalous about that?"
"Too light," she said simply. "Not dense enough. We can calculate the mass if there's a moon, or as in this case by gravitational deflections of the other planets."
"We believe you," Jophiel said.
"The whole thing has a density of silicate rock. All the way down, no metallic core."
"Earth's moon was like that," Asher said.
"That was a relic of a big impact which splashed up rock from the mantle of a big proto-Earth. Could this be an impact product?"
"We don't think so," Nicola said. "We think it was mined out."
"Mined out? How? What makes you think so?"
"Anomalous surface features," she said bluntly.
Now she displayed slightly fuzzy, heavily magnified images. Jophiel made out a very lunar landscape, airless and stark, briefly lit by the nearby star. Craters of all sizes, circles overlapping, and a series of big rectangular cuts in the ground, deeper than the light could reach.
"Leith," Asher said.
"How long will it take to mine out the entire core of a planet?"
"About as long as it might take to fix the Oort cloud, like Guba told us."
"Next?"
Jophiel glanced around at the crew who were watching intently.
He briefly wondered what was going through their minds, as for the first time they saw these worlds which were, he supposed, likely to become their home or their battleground. Guba B was a planet about the same distance from the parent star as Earth was from Sol. But in Nicola's image, Jophiel saw only a white glare, with faint suggestions of shadows like high clouds. And a hint of something else. At the limb of the planet, the visible edge, what looked like some kind of reflection, a curve mirroring the horizon tens, hundreds of kilometers high. Somebody called,
"It's where Earth should be. Looks more like Venus."
"That's about right," Nicola said. "This world has suffered a runaway greenhouse. Just like Venus, all the carbon dioxide baked out of the rocks and suspended in the air, trapping the heat. Guba's star is about 10% more luminous than Sol, which might explain why this world went bad."
Jophiel sensed an unspoken clause.
"Or?
What else?"
"War. We don't know what's down on the surface, but we have found artifice here."
"That roof," somebody said. "Over the horizon, you can clearly see it."
"You have sharp eyes," Nicola said, looking for the speaker. "How's your flight experience? See me later." She pulled up a relevant image. That fine arc, seen edge-on, hanging over the planet's horizon.
"We think this is a relic of a shell,
like an arcology dome, but one that once enclosed the entire planet. There are other scraps left in orbit, standing on immense space elevator pillars. With a shell like that, you could contain an atmosphere. You could shield out so